He could read the cop's lips, though. He was complaining about not having enough personnel to do everything that was expected of him. Dan looked around the small sitting room. It was cluttered with old Victorian furniture, darkish and gloomy. The long windows were completely covered by closed brown paisley drapes. A little chandelier holding seven electrified candles dangled on slim rods from the ceiling. The rosewood coffee table had been set with a tray of liqueurs and two oversized snifters. "Hello, Dan," Jane said as she put down the telephone. "It's good of you to see me." She got up from her chair and crossed the room, both hands extended to him. "It's good to see you again." She was wearing a silk brocade robe of pale pink, almost apricot. Very feminine. Very alluring as it clung to her tall, stately figure. Her rich auburn hair flowed loosely to her shoulders, catching the light from the chandelier with a coppery glow. She looked tired, but her face was almost unlined, her green eyes clear and not as suspicious as the last time they had met. Gesturing to the settee, Jane said with a slight smile, "I made certain that your favorite brand of Armagnac was brought here." "You should try it," Dan smiled back. "All right, I think I will." They sat side by side on the settee, and Jane allowed him to pour a splash of Armagnac into each of the snifters. "It looks like you've got some troubles tonight," Dan said. "The picketers?" "They're here every night. Usually the police clear them out by midnight. They're running a little late tonight." "Do you think you'll be reelected?" Dan asked.
"I expect to be."
He raised his glass to her. "Well, here's to victory in November, then." She nodded once, then sipped at the brandy. Dan took a good swig of his and let it slide down his throat, smooth and warm. "The Russians stole your ship," Jane said, with no preliminaries. "Yes, but I got my men back." "You did lead the raid on Lunagrat yourself?" It was not a question. He grinned boyishly. "Yes, I did." "That was a very courageous thing to do. Foolish, but courageous. I got them into the pickle they were in. It was my responsibility to get them out." Jane leaned back in the settee and swirled the liqueur in her glass. "But the Russians still have your ship, and they're going to claim in the world court that you've endangered the whole world by altering the orbit of that asteroid." With a little laugh, Dan said, "They can claim whatever they like. By the time the world court takes up the case, the asteroid will be in a permanent orbit around the Earth, no more dangerous to us than the moon is." "Unless the Russians alter that orbit." Dan hesitated a moment. "Why would they?" "Oh, sure, I can see why. To discredit me, but they can't push the asteroid into a trajectory that'll impact the Earth. It'd be like dropping 100 H-bombs on the area where it hits. They could drop it into the ocean, couldn't they?" "I suppose so," Dan mused. "What have you heard? Are they up to something?" The president shook her head. "My scenario analysts have been playing with their computers. The chances that the Russians would push the asteroid into an Earth impact are very small, less than 5%. Dan waited for the other shoe to drop. "But if they do it," Jane continued, "the chances that they will aim the asteroid at an American city are better than 50%. "That's crazy," Dan snapped. "Is it? Suppose the asteroid hits New York, or even Washington. What effect would that have on the world court? Or on world opinion? Where do you think Dan Randolph could hide from the lynch mobs?" Dan reached for his snifter and took another long swallow of Armagnac. "Do you have any evidence that the Russians are planning to do this?" "None whatsoever, but they could, any time they choose to." "It doesn't make sense." "It makes perfect sense, and you know it." Jane's green eyes flashed. "That's why it is critically important that neither you nor I do anything to antagonize them." "Just let them have their way, huh?" "Well, I never believed in the Chinese advice to a woman about to be raped. I like the American advice better. Kick the bastard in the balls." "Dan, you're such a fool. Why can't you face reality? Why can't you see the world as it is?" "I do see the world as it is, and I hate it."
"But don't you understand what's happening? Can't you see that the Russians are going to lose in the long run? If we can hang on..."
Feeling suddenly confused, Dan asked, "What are you talking about?"
"In the long run, we will prevail," Jane said firmly. "The Soviet system is crumbling bit by bit, a little more each year, each day."
"Crumbling?" I don't see...
They're getting fat and lazy, Jane insisted. Their economy is sinking deeper into the morass every year. They're dependent now on Western goods and third world raw materials. They buy manufactured items from you and the other space factories and set the prices for raw materials, Dan added, and the prices for oil and the prices for foodstuffs. But how long can that go on? They never could compete with a free economy, and they're falling farther behind with every luxury item they import. Setting his snifter down on the coffee table, Dan replied, They don't have to compete, Jane. They command. They run the world's economy because they have nuclear weapons and a huge army, and we don't. They have the guns and the power. She got to her feet and began pacing the little room. You don't understand. Yes, they have the power, for now. But it's slipping from their fingers, a little at a time. If we can be patient, if we can hang on for another decade or so, the Soviet system will dissolve. The Russians themselves will get rid of it. Bullshit, Dan exploded. That's the same kind of thinking that got us into this mess in the first place. Don't raise your voice to me, the president said. Double damn it to hell, Jane. I've been hearing that kind of crap all my goddamned life. Don't antagonize the Soviets. They might get angry and start a nuclear war. They're paranoid, so we've got to treat them very carefully. Let's reduce the number of weapons we've got. That'll make the Russians feel safer. Jesus H. Christ! We disarmed ourselves piece by piece, and all they did was build better weapons and more of them. That's all in the past, Jane admitted. But now we can outlast them. Socially, politically, economically, we're stronger than they are, Dan. Time is on our side. You're just dreaming, Jane. It's no dream. She faced him with glaring eyes. My forecasters have examined every possible scenario. The computers show it quite clearly. The Soviet system will fade away. A smile lit her face, just as Marx always said it would. And what do we do until that happy day? Dan grumbled. Bend over so they can kick us harder? We do nothing to antagonize them, Jane answered. We let events take their natural course. With a shake of his head, Dan said, No, Jane, not me. I don't care what your forecasters and your computers say. The Soviet system isn't going to fold itself up and disappear. They have the whole world in their grip, and they're tightening that grip every day. For the time being. The time being? Jesus Christ, Jane, look outside your own window. This country's falling apart. They're hungry out there. They have no jobs. Their money's worth nothing. They have no future to look forward to. I know it's going to be difficult, Jane said, almost in a whisper, but there's no other way. We've got to walk through the fire. Not me, said Dan, getting to his feet. I'm going to fight those sons of bitches in every way I can. That will just make things worse. He stared at her long and hard. She really believed what her aides were telling her. She really thought that, given time, the Soviet system would collapse. What they haven't told her, Dan realized, is that the American system is already collapsing. Jane, he said, softening his voice, I came here to ask for your help, or at least your understanding. Are you going to fly out to another asteroid? She was smiling again, smiling at him like a patient schoolteacher, or a mother who knows that her boy has been up to some mischief. She doesn't know, Dan told himself. The hijacking scheme hasn't leaked. It doesn't matter what I'm going to do, he said, feeling weary of the whole business. I came here to get your support, but I can see that it's useless. For a long moment, Jane said nothing. Dan could see uncertainty in her eyes, conflicting emotions playing across her beautiful face. Then why don't you give me your support? She blurted. She said it quickly, all in a rush, as if she were afraid the words would not come out at all if she spoke at her normal pace. They stood facing each other, the little coffee table between them. What do you mean? Dan asked. Stay here with me, Dan, said Jane. I need your strength, your courage. Stay? He felt an electrical shock surge through his guts. You want me to stay? Here? With three quick strides, Jane was in his arms, head nestled against his chest. I want you, Dan. I don't want to face the world alone. I need you beside me. He laughed softly. Jane, do you have any idea of what the media would do to you if you... They can be controlled, she murmured. They won't get in my way.